And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Not such a great day for the Vice President of the United States. Kamala Harris gave a speech to commemorate Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama, a milestone of the civil rights movement, but she used the occasion to attack Israel. And again, what is going on? This is a very different position than the position of the administration she works for. Is something underway to try to dump Kamala Harris from the presidential ticket? Of course, I think that would be a very useful move for Joe Biden, especially now where on this issue, where he has gotten terrible attacks from other members of the Democratic Party, he to have his own vice president, who is meeting separately, by the way, with an alternative prime minister in Israel. Benny Gantz is the leader of the opposition, but he is also a member of the war cabinet working with Prime Minister Netanyahu on the conduct of the war. He is meeting privately, not with President Biden, but Benny Gantz is coming to the White House to meet with Kamala Harris. I do think there is something to this story beneath the surface, and it could be nefarious. It could be important. Speaking of nefarious, there was a rally featuring several Democratic members of Congress at a joint fundraising event that took place in Long Island, New York. Jamal Bowman and Rashida Tlaib came forward to lead participants who are not only providing their money, but providing their voices at this political event. This is clip two. Okay, free, free Palestine. Now, this is supposed to be related to Gaza. And Gaza has been freed with no Israeli involvement in their government and law enforcement, no Israeli citizens living anywhere in Gaza, a completely Jew-free paradise, completely free, free Palestine. Since 2005, that's 19 years. 19 years. And since 2007, Hamas has been in charge of the situation in that aspect of Palestine, the Gaza Strip. So to have these two prominent office holders screaming free, free Palestine on the 59th anniversary of Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama, commemorating. And by the way, one of the things about the march in Selma is there were prominent Jewish leaders who participated in the march in Selma, Alabama, and rabbis and others who were part of that march for justice and were also exposed to the brutal attacks of some of the law enforcement officials in Selma, Alabama at that time, some 59 years ago. But here is the Vice President of the United States actually speaking on the anniversary of that event in our civil rights history. Clip one.
And the Israeli government must do more to significantly increase the flow of aid. No excuses. They must open new border crossings. They must not impose any unnecessary restrictions on the delivery of aid. They must ensure humanitarian personnel, sites, and convoys are not targeted. And they must work to restore basic services and promote order in Gaza so more food, water, and fuel can reach those in need.
Okay, what about the Hamas killers and torturers and rapists and people who burn other human beings alive, people who imprison hostages in cages? What about the people from Hamas? What must they do? And again, they would say, well, yeah, but Hamas doesn't get U.S. aid. Well, the people of Gaza are getting generous U.S. aid. And yet with no obligation attached to try to make some kind of lasting ceasefire possible. What is Israel's interest in Gaza? They've made it very clear. They have no desire to take over Gaza, having basically removed any Israeli presence in Gaza back in 2005. And the vice president makes this laundry list of things that Israel must do. Vice President Harris also came across with a call for an immediate ceasefire and a very one-sided ceasefire. Listen, this is clip three.
And given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire. Yeah. For at least the next 6 weeks, which is what is currently on the table. This will get the hostages out and get a significant amount of aid in. This would allow us to build something more enduring, to ensure Israel is secure, and to respect the right of the Palestinian people to dignity, freedom, and self-determination.
Okay, as long as Hamas is still a factor in the Gaza Strip, how does that promote freedom for the Palestinian people? I mean, this is outrageous. She said in her speech, the Israeli government must do more to significantly increase the flow of aid. The remarks came as Ms. Harris was scheduled to meet with Benny Gantz, a member of the Israel War Cabinet, at the White House today. And as the Biden administration faces immense pressure to limit the carnage in Gaza. The idea is the pressure should be on Israel and the White House, not on the terrorists who started the war and who promised again and again and again that they will do more October 7th-like attacks as soon as they're able to do so. They have made it very clear. There has been no forward offer to try to end hostilities just to get a ceasefire so that Hamas can rebuild. It's an outrageous situation. We will get a perspective on that situation and on other painful situations around the world from the great David French, a columnist for the New York Times and syndicated around the world, a religious conservative, a Christian conservative. Talk to him about the future in the Middle East and more close to home. A future for the Republican Party on this eve of Super Tuesday. David French coming up on the Medved Show. And what does he make of the flurry of new polls and the way this election is likely to be decided? That and more coming up on the Medved Show.
I agree with you about 99% of the time. I appreciate your pursuit of truth.
The Michael Medved Show.
You're one of the most brilliant guys on the air, TV or radio.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And And on the Michael Medved Show, David French is one of the most incisive and essential thinkers in the United States. He's an attorney. He's a veteran of serving our country in the Middle East, a decorated veteran of serving our country in the Middle East. He is a leading Christian conservative who has fought the good fight on behalf of religious liberty for many, many years. And he's an opinion columnist for the New York Times, with his ideas circulated all around the world. David, I wanted to ask you about something that President Trump just said and get your immediate response. He is obviously looking forward to a very successful Super Tuesday tomorrow, and he did very well with caucuses over the weekend. He now believes that basically the Republican Party is been taken over completely by the forces of MAGA, of Make America Great Again, in other words, his segment of the party. David French, this is President Trump speaking, clip number four.
Look, I want to win based on my policies are better. We're going to cut taxes. We're going to get interest rates down. You're going to be able to buy homes again. I mean, you can't buy a home today. The interest rates are so high. I want to win on safe borders. I want to stop wars. I want to stop the war in Ukraine with Russia. I want to stop what's happening in Israel. Israel would have never been attacked if I were president. Ukraine would have never, ever been attacked if I was president. You wouldn't have had inflation. Inflation was caused by high energy prices. I had low energy prices. I would have kept them there very easily. And it probably maybe caused the war with Ukraine because Putin became rich all of a sudden. It went up so much, and I watched President Biden talking about Putin. Putin became very rich because at $100 a barrel, he's got so much money to fight a war. At $40 a barrel, he doesn't have the money to fight a war. But he wouldn't have done it anyway because I told him not to.
What do you think, David? Do you think that if President Trump had told Putin not to start a war, he would have said, okay, I'll find something else to do?
No. Putin has been doing what Putin wants to do. And, you know, during the Trump presidency, Russia was very aggressive. I know that people like to say that, well, Putin wasn't aggressive during the Trump presidency. He invaded Georgia under Bush. He took Crimea under Obama. He finished off the Syrian resistance under Trump. So under Trump, the Putin regime essentially won the Syrian civil war. And he was so unintimidated by America that Russian mercenaries actually attacked American troops during Trump's administration. There was a point where Trump had American troops pull back in northern Syria, and Russian mercenaries occupied old American bases. So this idea that Putin might have been somehow incredibly intimidated by Trump is belied by the factual record where Russians actually attacked Americans while Trump was president. So, no, Putin does what Putin wants to do until he's stopped. And that's the issue. That's the issue in Ukraine. Can we stop Putin cold in Ukraine?
What about President Trump's claim that you can't buy a home today? My understanding is that in most places in the country, all around the country, the real estate market is pretty good and the prices are actually fairly high.
Yeah, where I live in outside of Nashville, the biggest problem is lack of inventory. In other words, there aren't enough houses on the market. But he is right, I would say, to highlight housing as a big issue in this country. And that is something that we do need to address. There need to be a lot more houses built. The problem is that's mainly a matter of state and local law, zoning regulations and whatnot that limit the ability of people to build new houses. So, yeah, we do have a housing problem in this country. It's just not clear that Trump can do much about it when so much of it is tied up in local zoning laws.
When we have today, Nikki Haley was asked about a previous pledge that she had made to participate in one of those series of debates where she really made herself a star because she did so well in so many of the debates. To get in those debates, she had pledged that she would endorse and support the Republican nominee, whoever it was. Now she says that considering President Trump and the way he has conducted himself, she doesn't feel obliged to hold on to that pledge. Do you think she's doing the right thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The right thing would have been not to enter into the pledge, but at the same time, the RNC stacked the deck so that if you didn't do it, you didn't pledge, you couldn't participate. But, you know, the pledge was a problem. The pledge is a problem. And I do think that the Trump campaign and Trump himself have taken a lot of actions that essentially say, hey, look, we are essentially tossing them out of the party. We believe they should be banished. And does that mean that Nikki Haley doesn't have to keep her word? I'm not so sure about that. You know, everyone knew who Trump was when she made the pledge. It's not like we have new information since the pledge. So it really does sort of bother me the way politicians say, I will never do X or Y or Z, or I pledge X or Y or Z, and then just turn around and do the opposite.
What about pledges? President Trump's not pledge, but declaration about the state of the Republican Party. This is a clip four, Jeremy.
And they say, always trying to demean, well, MAGA really represents 48% of the Republican Party. No, it represents 96% and maybe 100%. We're getting rid of the Romneys of the world. We want to get Romneys and those out. But they know that we are the only ones who can stop them.
Well, what do you say, David French?
Well, it is absolutely the case that Trump has a grip on the party. It is, and it is also absolutely the case that MAGA is very powerful up and down the party at all levels. However, it is not the case that MAGA dominates. So at every level. So where I am, we just actually had a mayoral election where the more establishment Republican absolutely smashed the MAGA challenger. And we have seen that happen at times. But it is also true that MAGA challengers have been successful on occasion in primaries, not as successful in the general election. So I think it is actually much more up for grabs. A post-Trump party is much more up for grabs. I think it would be a post-Trump party is going to be more populist than the party would have been had Trump lost in 2016. But a post-Trump party is going to be up for grabs, even if it is more populist.
Okay, so who's going to be grabbing at the Republican Party, and where is that grabbing going to lead us as a country and as a conservative movement? We'll get more from David French, opinion columnist and civil liberties, religious liberty lawyer, and more coming up on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, my guest is David French, who is a hotshot in many capacities. He is not only an outstanding writer, not only a warrior when that is necessary for our country, but also a great legal mind. And there was a decision today, a unanimous decision by the Supreme Court, where everybody seems to be, I mean, I guess a little bit relieved. It was a unanimous decision. It moves us past this question about whether Trump will be on the ballot in Colorado and in Illinois and in Maine. But you've had a chance to read over the decisions. And yes, they agreed 9-0, but for different reasons. You're not a big fan of this decision by the court. Why not?
No. Yeah, it is not surprising that the court overturned the Colorado decision. It's not surprising that it was 9-0. After the oral argument, really the big debate was it going to be 9-0 or 8-1, because the only justice who expressed any sympathy for the underlying disqualification seemed to be Sotomayor. And so once you knew and you're 99% sure that the Supreme Court was going to allow Trump to hold office, the question was going to be why. And there were narrow and broad rulings that the Supreme Court could have issued. And it issued a very broad a ruling that I think is very broad and very dangerous. So the narrow rulings they could have issued would include things like saying there wasn't sufficient due process in Colorado. In other words, that Trump wasn't given a sufficient opportunity to defend himself, or the very technical legal argument that a number of legal scholars made, that he's not actually an officer of or an officer under the United States, that the president is something different. Those would have been much more narrow rulings. A broader ruling would have been that he didn't commit insurrection or aid or abet the enemies of the Constitution. And that would have been a broader ruling because it would have really narrowed the scope of the amendment or the section to Civil War style insurrections. But the broadest possible ruling is the one they went with, which was, hey, you can't even use Section 3 on people seeking federal office unless Congress passes a law empowering the courts or another institution to rule people ineligible. And so essentially what that ruling meant was that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment just doesn't even exist essentially with regard to federal office seekers unless Congress takes action. And what's troubling about that is the actual language of the amendment says you can't hold office unless Congress takes action to remove the disability. It does not say you can't take office if Congress passes a statute saying you can't. It says you can't hold office if you're an insurrectionist unless Congress votes to allow you. And then the other aspect of this is that it's just different by saying that Congress has to pass a law to enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. What the court did is they said that Section 3 is different from every other provision of the 14th Amendment that does not require Congress to pass a law. So as of right now, at this moment, Michael, insurrectionists are eligible to run for Senate, for Congress, for president, because there's been no law passed by Congress. And that's just not quite the constitutional structure.
Well, apparently, Jamie Raskin, a congressman from Maryland, and other Democrats are talking about taking congressional action to along the lines that you were just talking about, David French. But none of that would have any impact on Trump's election, partially because his strategy of pursuing a strategy of delay in all his legal cases, that seems to be working out just fine for him, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's also the very practical reality that Congress is not going to pass a statute while Republicans run the House that would in any way empower somebody to knock Trump off the ballot. So there's that very, very practical reality that is just not going to happen. Now, I do think, since the Supreme Court has issued this ruling, that the next time we actually have a sensible, united Congress, they need to pass a law empowering the courts to eliminate people from office if they have, engaged in insurrection. In other words, revive Section 3, bring it back to life, because right now it's dead. Section 3 is applied to federal office holders, is completely dead. It's not effective.
This raises that uncomfortable question. Do you believe that President Trump committed insurrection?
Oh, yes. Yes. I think the language is engage in insurrection or rebellion, or provide aid or comfort to the enemies of the Constitution. So this is a very broad, very broad provision of the Constitution. But it's very broad only in a very limited circumstance that has only happened a few times in American history, and that's the existence of an insurrection. And so, you know, we've had the Whiskey Rebellion, we've had Shays Rebellion, we had an attempted coup before Lincoln was sworn in 1861, then we had the actual Confederacy. So there have been a few times in American history where we've had an insurrection, and the language is really broad. If you've been a part of it, you know, if you engaged in it or you provided aid or comfort, and in this circumstance, not only did Trump provide aid or comfort, I mean, the whole thing was put in motion by him. And, And so it's very, I think it's very difficult to argue that he didn't provide at least aid or comfort for what happened on January 6th and leading up to January 6th. The interesting question to me was, what would be the process by which you adjudicate that somebody has committed insurrection? And that's a due process question that the court really didn't reach at all. It just said, hey, Congress needs to do this. And that's that. And that's the end. And so, but it's interesting. The only five justices really signed on to that part. It was 5-4 on most of the reasoning and 9-0 on the outcome.
Okay. There is not going to be success for President Trump on his desire for the court to grant a president immunity for anything that he does as president.
Right.
That's not going to go, is it?
No, he's not going to get the immunity he's asking for. I mean, his argument is that anything he does that it involves an official act, even, you know, the hypo was, can I order ordering SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a presidential rival? Ordering SEAL Team 6 to engage in a military operation is a classic core, official act. But you can't order the military to kill a rival. So that's just not going to fly. But the Supreme Court's going to have to be the one that says it.
And given the fact that they probably will, in the past, back in 2016, I remember you were discussed as a potential third-party candidate for president. I know that, by the way, may your wife have the dear Lord's help in her struggle against cancer. But I'm not asking you about your personal plans. Do you think that with Trump and Biden as the two choices of major parties, this is probably one of those times when third party should be considered?
Oh, I think we should have been considering a third party for a very long time, or a fourth party, a far right, a center right, far left, center left. I think would be much more matching where the American people are, but that's not in the cards, not anytime soon.
So the best alternative for 2024?
If you are not content with either of those two candidates, then write in. Exercise your register that your objection to these two. You can definitely do that. Your vote can count as a protest vote against those two if you that's how you feel. But don't let people tell you you have to go with one or the other.
David French, so much appreciate your wisdom, your insight, and your courage. And may God continue to bless you and your family. Coming up on the Medved Show, a former Republican chair just loses it over Trump saying that MAGA has taken over the Republican Party. We'll get to that coming up on the Medved Show.
The greatest show on God's green earth.
There is no place that's better, more fun.
On the Michael Medved Show, we played earlier, speaking to David French, some of President Trump basically claiming that there is no Republican Party left that isn't MAGA, that basically he has done so well in the primaries, and he has, and he has won such decisive victories, and he has, that basically 100%. The Republican Party has gone MAGA. Now, that hasn't been the pattern in primaries. Even in Michigan, where President Trump won handily, and even in the Super Tuesday states that are coming up tomorrow, where he's expected to win, it's much more like 30-70. At worst, or often 40-60, with some 40% of the Republicans voting for Nikki Haley. And as Nikki Haley said, a 40% isn't a majority. She's a former accountant. She knows that. But it isn't a just a tiny little group either. It's more than that. And Michael Steele, who is a former lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland, is a former national chairman of the Republican Party. He is now a commentator on MSNBC, and he actually lost it fairly aggressively at the idea that MAGA has totally taken over the GOP. Here is what former Republican chair and leading black conservative Michael Steele had to say.
Game on, Trump. Game on. I've been in this party since 1976. If anyone is the biggest rhino, it's you. And we coming for you. So just so you understand, you drew the line, baby, stepping up to it. On a whole lot of Republicans out there, at least 40% or more are stepping to that line, too. So you just need to chill on that. What you got, y'all?
Oh, Alicia, Michael Steele putting Donald Trump on notice.
Just on notice. You bring it, baby, because you want a punk? Let's punk, baby. Let's go. One-on-one. I'm just so sick of this crap from these crazy folks who think that they are now the anchor of Republicanism. You're not. Just trust me, you're not.
And there's another non-fan of Trump's out there, also from the state of Maryland, interestingly, but he's a Democrat, very much a Democrat, Jamie Raskin. He is the one who has threatened congressional action to basically fulfill the requirement that was mentioned in the Supreme Court decision today, and to try to win a majority in Congress to undo the eligibility of any candidate who has engaged in insurrection. Listen.
I am working with a number of my colleagues, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Eric Swalwell, to revive legislation that we had to set up a process by which we could determine that someone who committed insurrection is disqualified by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And the House of Representatives already impeached Donald Trump for participating in insurrection by inciting it. So the House has already pronounced upon that.
Okay, as I think was very accurately stated by David French, the chance on getting this kind of legislation through the House and Senate and then signed by a president who may soon be someone other than Joe Biden, I think it's a very, very much a long shot. Meanwhile, Nikki Haley is still there. And she's still campaigning and campaigning more aggressively than ever. She was on Meet the Press, and she made a strong statement regarding Ukraine and its survival in the midst of a brutal war. This is clip 8.
Lindsey Graham has taken up Donald Trump's position that he wants to support more aid to Ukraine only if it's in the form of a loan. Is that something you would support?
I think we need to give them the equipment and ammunition they need to win.
Is a loan appropriate?
I mean, you can do a loan if you want, but if that's like taking away the situation, what you should be looking at is Putin has been very clear. Once he takes Ukraine, he's not going to stop. Poland and the Baltics are next. Look at what's happening with Moldova now. Those are NATO countries, not Moldova, but the others. Those are NATO countries. That puts America at war. This is about preventing war. If we don't work with our allies to give them the equipment and ammunition to win, if Ukraine falls, Russia will go further, and that puts America at war. So this isn't about a loan. Give them the equipment and ammunition they need to win, and let's put this to bed. Biden was too slow in the process, and now Republicans are trying to play footsie with it. This is not something to play footsie with. This is about protecting Americans.
Yeah, I don't know about playing footsie, if that's the right analogy, but one of the things she should have said is a point that Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, makes, is that most of the money that the United States gives to Ukraine to help secure weapons and ammunition comes back to the United States. It is used to buy that ammunition. It is used to buy the weapons. And the same thing has been true of the aid we've provided over many years to Israel. There are a number of joint programs that we've done with the Israelis that have helped us a great deal. For instance, the whole development of Iron Dome, which has saved American lives, which has been Israeli initiative and a great deal of Uncle Sam's money, but very much to benefit Uncle Sam. There's another comment on Ukraine from Mike Turner, who's the outstanding representative from Ohio. He was on Face the Nation, and he talked about the importance of providing that aid to our embattled ally. This is clip six.
We have to support Ukraine. The speaker does support Ukraine, and I do think that, probably the most important development that occurred last week was that Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries came forward and said that the Democrats will not join with the small number of Republicans, frequently referred to as the Chaos Caucus, who say to the speaker that we will remove the speaker if he moves forward on Ukraine, moves forward on spending bills. They cannot do that without Democrat support. He said Democrats will not support that. As long as we're moving forward with bipartisan bills, that includes funding the government, that includes Ukraine, that includes Israel. I believe as a result of that step, that Speaker Johnson now has the leeway and the flexibility to work through Congress and the Appropriations Committee. I think it's going to be moving quickly. We're going to
they
get our appropriations.
They run out of ammunition in April.
They're not completely out of ammunition. I was in Kyiv last month and met with Zelensky also at the Munich Security Conference, and certainly spoke to our military. And they are rationing, but they are not out. This is critical.
Yeah.
We have to support them now or they will lose. And I think the speaker sees that emergency. Hakeem Jeffries sees that emergency. And I think we're going to see bills hit the floor.
And that, let us hope, is an accurate prediction. It is certainly something that the United States needs. And the Republican Party, if it's going to be even vaguely recognizable as the party of Reagan, needs very dramatically. One aspect of the party of Reagan... there is a new New York Times, Siena College poll, which I mentioned. This is amazing, and even Ronald Reagan didn't achieve this. But according to the poll, Trump even led Biden among Hispanic voters. He led Biden among Hispanic voters by 6%. Which is not much, especially considering the margin of error. But the poll found that a total of 73% of all voters believe that Biden is too old to be an effective president, including a majority of the voters who voted for him in 2020. More disturbing news from a poll. This is, believe it or not, they're doing a poll on the Florida's governor's race coming up in 2026. And you say, what about Governor DeSantis? Well, he's term limited. They have a term of 2 terms to be governor of Florida. So right now, Byron Donalds, the outstanding member of Congress from the District 19, he is running for governor, and at least so it is reported, getting 3%. The leader for governor of Florida, Matt Gaetz. And we think that this will be the last election in which the MAGA world will have an influence. We will see what tomorrow and the next day have to bring to this greatest nation on God's green earth.